Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Oh, we all know time is fleeting, so if you've not had time yet to plan your pre-spring reading or that moment that you can just grab a good book, sit down, and get going, well, now is your chance. This morning, the folks from Odyssey join us to present a fine list of books that will have you maybe up all night turning the pages. Is there a better feeling in the world? Emily Crow is here. Emily is here to tell us, 8 selections, 8 ideas for you?
Maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see if we get that far.
Emily, good morning. Thank you very much for being with us. It's always a great pleasure to have you here.
Oh, hey, Joe. Thanks for having us here
today. How are things at the Odyssey in South Adelaide?
We're just rocking away. We've got a great event schedule this month of March.
Excellent. And you had a great event last night. Where would you like to begin?
Well, I'm going to start with that book. It's called How to Get Filthy Rich in Rising Asia. The author is Mohsin Hamid. And it goes on sale today. And last night, my bookstore was honored to launch not just his U.S., but his worldwide tour. This book is definitely going to be one of the most talked about novels of the year. Disregard the title. It's a little bit wordy and a little bit awkward, but don't let that get in your way. This book is a brilliant and inventive satire of the very kind of self-help book that the title is mocking. Not only is the book riveting and unusual and edgy, but the author manages to pull off a second-person narrative point of view. And I don't know about you, but I haven't encountered many books with that kind of narrator since I read my choose-your-own-adventure books back in elementary school. And that's because they're very difficult to write well, but Hamid definitely does this one with ease. It's the story of an unnamed young man living in an unnamed country in Asia. Through various twists of fate and fortune, he moves from the country to the city, and that's where his star begins to rise. He is wily and smart, and he knows just when to apply pressure, just when to hold back, and thus he is able to rise from a penniless delivery boy to become the mogul of a big bottled water empire. Along the way, he gives you advice on how you can do the same, which brings the book back full circle to the title. I was naturally imagining Pakistan as the setting for the book, since that is where the author is from, but it really could be just about any country in Asia with an emerging economy. He really wanted to present sort of a universal look behind it. I can't tell you how fresh and imaginative this book is. His observations and his wit are razor sharp. And you can see in my reading copy here, I've got tons of pages dog-eared there, and I don't usually mark my books up like that.
Oh, I couldn't do that.
Well, I had to write a review, so.
You know, I understand. I can't do that. I love this book. I read this over the weekend. I fell in love with
this
book.
It's amazing.
He's an amazing speaker. We had an interview with him yesterday morning to promote your event, and he was so
smart and thoughtful.
Oh my God. And it's really incredible. And I have not yet read The Reluctant Fundamentalist, but I look forward to reading that now.
Yeah, same with me. I'm going to go back and read both of his other books.
How to Get Filthy Rich in Rising Asia. Mohsin Hamid is the author, and the book is published by Riverhead. And quite a winner.
Indeed. Okay, next I'm going in a slightly different direction. I'm going to talk about a YA book. It's called Eleanor and Park by Rainbow Rowell. This young adult book is set in 1986, and it captures the magic and the uncertainty and really the explosion of the senses that you feel when you first fall in love. And if you're like me and you also fell in love for the first time in the 1980s, you'll also feel wave after wave of nostalgia as you turn the pages. Eleanor and Park, they're an unlikely couple. Park is an average middle-class kid. He's just trying to keep his head down and out of the line of fire of the popular kids of the high school. Eleanor's life, though, is a disaster. She's poor, her clothing is ill-fitting, and she lives in constant fear of her very creepy stepfather. She's also bright enough to know that her future isn't likely to improve. This book is about love and adolescence and the agony of high school when you don't fit in, but it's also about finding a connection with somebody and then having the courage to nurture it instead of retreating from it. It's about maintaining dignity when the mean girls flush your clothes down the toilet during gym class, or when your father is disappointed in you because you're not the son he was hoping for, or if you're so poor that you have to steal a toothbrush in order to maintain dental hygiene. Ultimately, though, I think this book captures both the headlong rush and that tentativeness of first love, and its inevitable ending will totally break your heart. I really, really liked this book, and it's one of the best YA books I've read in a number of years. You definitely don't have to be a young adult to read it and appreciate it.
Eleanor and Park by Rainbow Rowell. Beautiful.
Okay. Next is my only work of nonfiction today. It is called After Visiting Friends, written by Michael Haney. And I should preface this by saying I don't read very many memoirs. I figure most people who write them, either they don't have a good enough story to tell or they're not quite a good enough writer to tell it. But Michael Haney actually succeeds here on both counts. He had just turned 6 when his uncle knocked on his family's back door one morning with the tragic news that Bob Haney, Michael's father, was found alone near his car, dead of an apparent heart attack. But later on, he wondered if that was the entire truth. Various obituaries in the city mention that the elder Haney had died after visiting friends, which is where the title comes from. But who were these friends, and why did they not attend the funeral? It is only when Michael is a journalist in his adulthood that he decides to bring his investigative skills to bear, and he starts inquiring about the circumstances surrounding his father's death. In his search for what really happened the night his father died, it's not the 25-year-old cold trail so much as the efforts of his father's former friends and colleagues that nearly prevent him from uncovering what the real story was. Along the way, the reader gets a front-row show to the golden age of Chicago journalism, and it's old school, really old school, hardcore, and they've got a code of honor that makes the mafia look like they're just playing at it. But in this memoir, Haney's search for the truth behind his father's death ends up feeling both really personal but also quite universal. And he's able to demonstrate that it's only really knowing where we fit between those who came before us and the generations to come that we can really know who we are.
It's a very hard book to talk about because there is, obviously the whole question is what happened to his father, and you can't talk about that in an interview. We had him on last week.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and it was really difficult because, you can't talk about the elephant in the room, which is what happened.
Right.
And that's, of course, what everybody wants to know. And but I agree with you. The way he tells the story and to get you to that point, and then when you find out what it is, which is not, I wouldn't say it's extraordinary. You know, it's not like, but it is very human and very everything then falls in place and it becomes very understanding why everybody acted the way they did.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a beautiful book.
After the writing's great, too.
Really, well, good journalist.
Yes.
And you can tell. It's After Visiting Friends, A Son's Story by Michael Haney.
Okay, next I am going to go with a book called Benediction, and the author is Kent Harif. Joe, have you ever created a list of authors whose books you would just purchase and read without question, no matter what the subject is?
Well, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so, pretty much the show, but yes.
So Kent Harif is one of those authors on my list. I first read him back when Plain Song was published. I think that was back around 1998 or so, at which point I went back and read all of his previously published books. This writer is amazing. Thus, when I heard that he had a new book coming out this year, I was really chomping at the bit to get at it. Like his previous novels, Benediction takes the small town of Holt, Colorado for its setting. And also like them, it's a slow and steady build over the course of the novel. Dad Lewis is the main character, and he learns in the first chapter that he has cancer, and he's not long for this world. So I'm not giving anything away by saying that. He is an older gentleman, he's hardworking, and he's very well respected locally. He's honest and dependable, and while he certainly has been a good husband to his wife of many decades, he becomes less and less sure of the kind of father he has been to his children, particularly his son, as the book goes on. I really do feel that Kent Harif has his finger on the pulse of small-town Americana. So he knows all about the hard work and the dreams and the aspirations and the sometimes inevitable realization that life is not what you thought it would become. He has a clinical but very gentle precision, and he just uncovers the foibles of these small town folks. And I think he is a genius at finding the beauty in the daily life and revealing the quiet dignity of our human condition.
It is Benediction by Kent Harriff, and I have not read the book, but wonderful reviews, so look forward to it.
Okay. How much time do we have left?
Oh, you're good.
We're good. Great. Yeah. All right. I'll move on to an epistolary novel. It's called Francis and Bernard, and it is written by Carlene Bauer. I really love the tagline of this book. When you open up the dust jacket flap, it says, "A letter can spark a friendship, and a friendship can change a life." When Francis and Bernard meet at an artist's colony, they are not quite certain what to make of each other, but one letter changes everything. Bernard's first letter to Francis leads to a deep and intense friendship that evolves over time into something not quite definable. It's a little bit more than friendship. It's not necessarily full-on romance. But they really become each other's lifeline. Francis and Bernard navigate the tricky waters of publishing and religion and mental illness, and they do it all in hauntingly beautiful language and all through the exchange of letters. I find it rare in fiction these days to encounter religion being taken seriously in characters' lives. You know, there are a few exceptions, but as an agnostic Episcopalian, I found it really fascinating to read of Francis's and Bernard's exploration of Catholicism and how to make room for it in their daily lives, in a way that people just don't seem to talk about faith these days.
Hmm.
So I think if you enjoy the works of Marilynne Robinson, or if you liked 84 Charing Cross Road, and if you perhaps appreciate the bittersweet aspects of life, you should give this one a spin. I should let you know the characters are actually loosely based on Flannery O'Connor and Robert Lowell.
Right.
But I didn't know that going into it. I read a manuscript about 18 months ago, and I had no idea going into it that they were based on anybody of import. But I don't think you have to know those writers in real life to be able to appreciate this book.
It is Francis and Bernard by Carlene Bauer. And I think we have time for one more, about 2 minutes.
Okay. So I'm going to go with A Tale for the Time Being by Ruth Ozeki. It's not published yet. It actually comes out next Tuesday. But this is one of the most unusual and moving books that I've read in a long time. She is able to combine Zen philosophy and quantum physics, and she's really created a work of metafiction here. She's both breaking down the fourth wall of fiction and building it back up again, depending on what the narrative point of view is. There's one character named Jiko, and she is a very old Buddhist nun. And she has a calm, hard-earned acceptance of the contradictions in life. And she contrasts with her great-granddaughter Nao, who is a very bright but bullied schoolgirl with a suicidal father.
Mm.
Meanwhile, on the opposite side of the world, Ruth lives in the Pacific Northwest. And one day, while she's walking along the beach, she discovers a diary written by a young girl in Japan who was talking about her Buddhist great-grandmother. So all of these character stories intermingle and mix, and you're rooting for all of them to sort of solve the respective puzzles in each of their lives. And it's rare that I've encountered a novel that has made me think about our world quite as much as this one has. She's bringing the quantum physics in by saying that distance and time are mutable in storytelling, depending on the observer. And in this case, the reader is the ultimate observer. And this book is full of insight, and it's wrapped up in a package that plays with structure and form, and it's amazing. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just about to say I've just finished this, and it's stunning. It really is really incredible.
That's why we chose it for our first editions club next month.
I would agree with that decision.
Yeah.
It is, and she's doing an event, yes?
Yes, she'll be at our store next Wednesday on March 13th. And then this coming Saturday on March 9th, Mary Robinson, former president of Ireland, is going to be doing an event too.
That is so cool. Excellent. So all kinds of wonderful events happening at Odyssey. All you have to do is check them out at odysseybks.com. Odysseybks.com. Better yet, go see them in South Hadley on 9 College Street. Or again, odysseybks.com. Emily, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.